The first white settlers viewed America as a paradise, with its raw nature and vast fertile plains. The mostly British and European immigrants that followed in the 20th century were fascinated by the promise of the American dream lifestyle and potential delights of a land of opportunity, a still young and increasingly modernizing civilization. Across America, the increase in population and modernity demanded continued infrastructure and technological developments, and life became faster and faster. The American lifestyle is supported and controlled from Capitol Hill and in the White House.
What presidents do, or at least supposed to do.
When American markets broke down, who jump-started our engine? When America was losing 750,000 jobs per month, who gave us a lift?
I get tired of people who are holier than thou because they've been pro-life longer than I have.
First off, you have to understand across the world, we use the word democracies, which are most of the countries, erroneously. They are essentially representative government, and the people do not rule. They give their power away on election day to people who then make laws and operate the government.
The system of ruling has become important to an extent that if you are going to have an American lifestyle, you have to have an American ruling system as well. This way of ruling has come to be known as American democracy. Adopting this version of democracy, people decide how to live. As the colonists in North America gained independence from Britain in the 18th century, the inner workings of democracy in the United States underwent gradual, steady changes to become like what it is today. That said, since 100 years ago, election campaigns and elections have been held in the same way. The United States of America is a country home to foreign nationals from across the world. The English, the French, the Chinese, the Irish, and so on. Every single narrative about the American world is based on the narratives offered by these people.
My name is Mike Gravel, former U.S. Senator representing the state of Alaska for two terms back in 1969 to 81.
My name is Frankton Lamb. I'm a former assistant counsel of the House Judiciary Committee in the U.S. Congress.
So I'm Thierry Messon. I'm a French political analyst, and I'm also the head of the Volta Network.
My name is William Engdahl. My books are written under the title of F. William Engdahl, and I'm an economist and a geopolitical analyst.
My name is Art Olivier. I am the former mayor of Bellflower, California, in Los Angeles County.
My name is Rodney Shakespeare. I'm visiting professor of binary economics at Trisakti University in Jakarta.
In the United States, at the beginning of our history, Thomas Jefferson and Madison and others all believed that parties were a bad thing. They called them factions. Well, the minute we formed the government, you had a party with Alexander Hamilton and Thomas Jefferson, and we've had a two-party system ever since.
The Republican Party convenes to nominate its choice for president.
The Republican Party should unequivocally repudiate extremists of the right and the left.
Throughout U.S. history, international observers have been confined to consider U.S. presidential candidates as belonging to one of only two parties. It is pretty much assured that any electoral candidate who is independent or belongs to a party or group other than the Republicans or Democrats will be buried behind the two-party competition. Whatever the reason for this, it should be sought within the U.S. itself.
You know, during an election, the candidate's going to say what he needs to say to get the people to support him. If, let's say you're in a kind of a poorer area, working class neighborhood, you're going to want to be in the Democratic Party because the Democratic Party is shown in the media as they're the ones that care about the poor and you know, the low-income people. If you're in a higher-end, upper-middle-income area or rich area, of course you want to be a Republican because they are portrayed as people that will cut your taxes and then reduce regulation so your business can grow.
To become a congressman or a senator or a president of the United States today has become an extremely expensive process. The president alone, the campaign costs billions of dollars. It's absurd, but it does.
If you don't have the money, you're not going to win. They also influence the media. The media is just as important as your campaign funding. In a bigger race, it's even more important.
The media is a phenomenally influencing factor on the public's opinion. This is a truth that cannot be denied. But who are the people in the control rooms? Who manipulates media bias?
The senator in a key state or a representative, that costs tens of millions, sometimes more, of dollars. So most normal people have no chance unless they find sponsors. And here's where the lobbying groups, the vested interests, come in.
A lobby has played historically in delivering services and benefits to the American people, particularly as they view them and to their what we call constituency. For example, you've got the American Medical Association, probably the first or second most powerful lobby in America. And you've heard of the National Rifle Association, NRA, very powerful.
You're running for office, okay? You. And so I represent a special interest. I go to you and I say, how do you feel about what I'm doing in our industry? And you say, oh, I'm very supportive of your industry. Well, because you want money. So then I'll donate to your campaign. I help finance your election. You get elected. And then after you're elected, if I've got a problem and I want legislation, I go talk to you.
If you control oil, you control an economy. If you control money, you control commerce. But if you control arms, you control the people.
You have to take care of the interest of the people that funded your campaign. You know, they expect that. They know that that you have done this your entire political career, because you know what you'll do is you'll start off on a lower position like the city council, and then you'll take care of the trash contractors and the ambulance and all the people that have their special interests, and then they'll help promote you into the next level so that you can be trusted into taking care of their interests.
Thank you, NRA, for having the heart, the passion, the guts to fight for what is right, for standing and fighting for America. God bless you.
When you must fight, don't lose. We're growing stronger every day. We are the NRA.
As it has been described to ordinary American citizens, lobbies have the responsibility to apprise those who hold the power of the desires of the public and to persuade them to respond to those desires.
The a special interest group will write legislation. Lobbyists will take that legislation to the congressmen or to the senators and say, this is what we want. And then the congressmen and senators will introduce that legislation into the House and into the Senate. And then the work of the lobbyists, of course, will be to make sure that they can secure enough people in the Congress and the Senate to vote on that legislation to get it passed.
Imagine that a society constituting various tastes, but having similar essential needs, needs such as food or any primary need similar to that, intends to make plans in order for its demands and interests to be met. In such conditions, something like firearms could undermine the security of that society. Now, if a group of people would be found that would convince the society or even the lawmakers that the firearms are as attractive, as popular, and as essential as hamburgers, the lawmakers will approve of it too. This change in preference is something that lobbies are skillful at promoting and achieving.
We shouldn't have guns in every home, and you know the fact is that there are more guns, more than 350 million guns, and there's only 308 million population in circulation. That's a gun for every person plus.
So we have a weapons culture. It's gone to extreme and it's ridiculous. We don't need assault rifles to go hunting. If you're going to go kill a bear or kill a moose, what have you, you don't need a clip of 15 or more rounds. You'll destroy the animal. There'll be nothing to eat by the time you get done shooting it. So we don't need that. But here again, the gun lobby is a lobby, a special interest group, and they have a cultural, ideological persuasion, and they have great influence.
The lawfulness and availability to the domestic population of military standard weapons is the result of the efforts of such groups. On the 20th of April, 1999, two American teenagers, one 17 and the other 18, entered the high school where they studied and started randomly shooting down their fellow students. They killed 15 students and injured 23 others. In recent years, many cases similar to the Columbine High School massacre have occurred.
So, campaign contributions are a legal form of bribery. Period. Let me repeat. Campaign contributions are a legal form of bribery.
Where is the power in the U.S.? In fact, we see that the economic system has a great part of the power.
You realize that for over 50 years, the American people have been without a health system significantly financed by the government, which every other civilized, industrialized country in the world has had for decades. And the reason is that the doctors in America make very huge salaries. The cost of medical care is very high in America.
There are no public health support systems in the U.S., a reality that pushed Obama to introduce a common insurance plan, which has gained fame under his own name.
So finally, the voters accepted what's called Obamacare, and that's the beginning. But that's opposed now by the American Medical Association, and what are they going to do? They're going to influence the Congress to try to repeal it. They'll fail in the short term. Then they'll go into court. They'll finance a court action to try to declare it unconstitutional at the level of the Supreme Court.
The business of pharmaceutical giants is not limited to treating illness. They also have other markets, which are no less profitable than the healthcare market.
Most of the antibiotics produced by drug companies in America go to agriculture today, not to humans for medical illnesses. Then came the advent of GMO, genetically modified organisms, the patenting of seeds by companies like Monsanto, Syngenta in Switzerland, Dow Chemical, DuPont, and a very few others. It's really Monsanto's game. And Monsanto is a core group of the this elite group of companies around the Rockefeller family, the Bush family, and so forth.
Sometimes there isn't even need for indirect lobbies. The top managers of Monsanto, for example, will go to the government and to legal institutions by themselves.
So, once they got the acceptance through the Supreme Court of the United States of patented seeds as legitimate, patenting life, which absolutely is illegitimate, it's against the laws of nature, it's against the laws of God, in my view, but not against the laws of the Supreme Court, who are a corrupt body of justices today. Beginning, I would say, in a major way in the 1980s, the 1990s, the food that Americans bought in their supermarket, it looked like normal chicken. It looked like normal beef. But in reality, it was industrialized food products. One thing they refused to outsource, and that was agribusiness. Agribusiness was a project funded by the Rockefeller family in the 1950s. The idea of controlling the world food supply the way that they, with their Standard Oil, their cartel of the Seven Sisters back then.
During the 20th century, oil was transformed into the most strategic product in the world. It doesn't have merely a value of its own, but the trade of it has become a model for other trades, and it even controls the value of the U.S. dollar.
Now down 21%.
Because we're now down 43%. It was the worst day on Wall Street since the crash of 1987.
This could be the most serious recession in decades. And that means life, as most Americans know it, is about to change, in some cases dramatically.
America's fourth biggest bank, Lehman Brothers, declared bankruptcy, igniting a worldwide economic crisis.
The company that came unglued
led to the collapse of America's housing market.
Lehman Brothers has filed for bankruptcy.
Stocks all around the world are tanking because of the crisis on Wall Street and a financial crisis around the globe.
The ability to keep the world accepting dollars as if it were worth the same thing was at the heart of American geopolitics after 1971. The lobby group that became extremely crucial to that was the lobby group of big oil. At that time, the British and American oil giants that dominated the world oil industry were called by some the Seven Sisters because there were seven giant companies.
From the 50s to the 70s, the seven oil giants replaced governments in sharing the profits. All of the oil regions in the world were roped into the domain of influence of these seven companies, and billionaires such as John D. Rockefeller were managing it all. This oil fever intensified even more with time.
Henry Kissinger, when he was Secretary of State, during the first oil crisis in 73, 74, in that time period. If you control the oil, you control entire nations. And so it's control of the Middle East oil, the largest known reserves of cheap oil and high quality oil in the world. The biggest oil services company in the world, the biggest military defense contractor in the world. So you have a marriage of both right there.
You've got McDonnell, Douglas, Boeing, Raytheon, all these companies. The American economy is largely a military. You see, you can't export your military corporations. Whereas all the other ones, you can just export, you see, and get to it and get the work done by cheaper labor abroad. But I don't think you'd be allowed to export the big military corporations.
It could be that exporting military production would be prohibited according to laws under national security, but the finished products of that industry can be sold abroad for great profit.
There's no question the Iraq War provided the opportunity for Halliburton and other corporations to loot the American treasury. But this is the military-industrial complex. They're looting it all the time.
Where is the power? Certainly not at the White House. The power is the deep state, this secret military government. They are not interested to be involved in all the decisions of the everyday decisions. They are only interested to be involved in the big economical and military decisions. And since years, they are imposing their will to all this country.
The purpose of the occupation of Iraq, that's the key thing, was to create permanent United States military bases, permanent. And they're still there. They're still there. Obama makes headlines about taking U.S. troops out of Iraq, but the bases are still there.
The U.S. economy is an economy of war. That's not my personal opinion, you know. It was wrote in official reports of the International Monetary Fund in, I think, in 2003. So it means they have very few inner production for civilian purposes, but they have a huge military industry, and they need for the economy to have war. If they don't have war, the US will absolutely collapse. You can't separate the two things. What is the dollar without the US Army? Nobody will accept the dollar without the US Army.
The big corporations think purely of themselves, not of anybody else. And as a result, 56,000 commercial enterprises have been exported out of the country. That's about 8 million jobs. And if I'm in a job, my spending creates another job, and that spending creates another job. And it's reckoned to be about four. My job creates four. So you take 8 million, multiply by four, and America has exported 32 million jobs. And it's done that simply because the big corporations are only interested in themselves. All the spending power of the jobs in those 56,000 commercial enterprises has gone. It's gone permanently. And that's why that, plus the huge expense of the military expenditure, and one or two other things, but those are the two big reasons why the American economy is about to collapse.
Wall Street is there to make money, and Wall Street is controlled by the banks. And so now you have the banks who want to make a profit and are greedy, and they don't care about the people, they care about making profits.
We are all taught that you must borrow money at interest, and yet you don't have to do that. But there is now a global elite which controls the creation of the money supply and is putting everybody into debt. I mean, Egypt has just borrowed $5 billion, I think. And that money, the interest will compound, and Egypt's going to be in debt forevermore. If you borrow from abroad, you are going to be controlled. If you borrow from the banking system, you are going to be controlled by the banking system.
In the last 20 years, I would say, since the 1980s, Wall Street began growing more and more powerful inside the United States political matrix or economic matrix. And the power comes through their ability to buy elections and elected officials in Washington.
The reality is, in the USA, finance, the lobbyists and the donations and the big corporations decide everything.